This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, guys? Welcome to News Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. He's joined by Forrest Walker, at Do Not on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm pretty good.
Have you seen the Hobbs & Shaw trailer?
No, it just came out. I've heard it's very long, though, so that should be fun.
Yeah, as most Fast & Furious trailers are. Like, I gotta be honest, like, normally, like, after I watch a Fast & Furious trailer, I'm, like, really hyped. They're starting to bend the constructs of reality a little bit too much for me now. Like, it's starting to get a little out of hand.
So the all the stuff with submarines and ice
that's all good. Like, I can see that happening. But the whole, like, I think there's a part in this trailer where The Rock brings down a helicopter, like, by himself. So what he does is he gets a rope and he uses it as, like, a pulley, and he brings down this helicopter. Like, and I'm just like, no, okay, guys. Like, I'm okay with the flying cars. I'm okay with the submarine. But you can't tell me The Rock can bring down this helicopter. We gotta relax here.
He did a double tap a drone one time, and also there was a 35 mile long runway in Furious 6. So I'm willing to accept whatever they give me at this point. I'm not gonna fight back. I'm suspending my disbelief no matter what.
Maybe that train was going really slow. Everybody says that runway was, like, really, really long. I'm just like, maybe we overestimated how fast they were going. Maybe they were going like 35.
The airplane was in no hurry to take off.
Yeah, like maybe there was a speed limit. Like, maybe there was, like, you know, like that was a big plane. Can't imagine it was going too fast.
Yeah, because bigger planes need less speed to get in the air, right?
Yeah, I mean that's what I've been told. But yeah, I'm really bummed out. I'm a big fan how they're doing this whole Fast and Furious universe thing. Like, I'm in. Like, you've already got me in. With that first teaser for Hobbs and Shaw, I loved it. This one, I'm just like, all right, guys, like we got to stay grounded in reality a little bit, just a little bit. Like, you don't have to go overboard. Like we don't have to go back to the streets of Los Angeles and go street racing here. Like, we can just go just go back to, like, Fast Five. Like, you know, like where we're dragging a bank vault across Rio. Like, that's a little bit more realistic for me.
I mean, I suppose. I guess it is more realistic to drag a bank vault around, but I don't know. The tensile strength of anything the universe has ever made is not enough to carry something around on ropes like that. Look, I'm with you in a way that this is a ridiculous and frankly impossible to believe scenario, but there's a lot of impossible to believe scenarios in these movies, so I just view that they happen in some other universe where stuff's just cooler.
I think at one point in this trailer, they had, like, a bionic soldier, and I'm just like, all right, guys, like, relax, like, we don't need to have, like, inanimate objects in this, like, we just don't, like, this is not a superhero movie. Like, I know we're getting really superhero-ish, but we don't have to make it that way.
I have some bad news for you. It's always been superheroes. Ever since Donald's living one quarter mile at a time, he's been a superhero. They've all been heroes. This is the Avengers, but for cars, and that's just where it's at.
That's a real bummer. That's a real bummer. So let's go ahead and talk about this series, shall we? So the Rockets have absolutely obliterated the Utah Jazz. They just have. They just absolutely obliterated the Utah Jazz. What was that, Forrest?
Well, it is possible the Rockets could have scored 4 more points over one of those games to tie the Bucks for biggest total lead in a playoff series. Sure. That's the only thing I can think to say about it, which is an effusive praise.
I'm thoroughly impressed by what the Rockets have done these first couple games. You know, the talk going to the playoffs was how the Rockets got the hardest possible path to a title and how they really screwed themselves in that last OKC game by falling to the 4 seed. And while that still might be true, we don't know. All Houston's technically done is protect home court at this point. But I said on the last podcast, if Houston wanted to show that they were a legitimate title contender, they would go into game one and blow out the Utah Jazz. They would say, screw everyone that says this was going to be a close series. We're still the greatest threat to the Warriors in the West, and we don't care what our path to a title will be. Not only did they do that, but they did that twice. And I gotta say, I'm beyond impressed.
Yeah, they have looked fantastic. Now, there is some talk about, well, the Jazz role players are not shooting very well. Their three-point percentage is pretty ugly given the quality of looks they're getting. It should even out somewhat. And that may be the case, but even if it does, it's not going to make up for this 52-point deficit that the Rockets have put the Jazz into. There is every reason to believe that if the Rockets put their heads down, they can go ahead and win Game 3 and end this series tomorrow.
Did you see... Well, first of all, you're 100% right about the three-point shooting from the Jazz. Like, that's definitely going to normalize out, especially when they go to Utah. They're much better in Utah than they are on the road. That's a legitimate home court advantage. And a lot of that stuff's going to even out. You're right. And to some extent, the Rockets perhaps got the worst possible version of the Utah Jazz they possibly could. And in that respect, they might have been lucky. But did you see this thing, by the way? So a friend of mine sent me this clip in the morning that, like, Shaq called Joe Ingles a non-shooter on TNT.
Like, it's hilarious.
Did you see that? Like I had to rewind it. It was pretty early in the morning when I got that text. I was like, okay, this must be Chuck. This must be someone else. I think so. Chuck was actually defending Joe Ingles. Like, Shaq called Joe Ingles a non-3-point. Like, what? Like, what?
Is it just his height? I don't understand it. The weird thing is, like, the stereotype is that, like, you know,
he's
one of the best
3-point shooters in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what?
If you paid attention to anything, or even if you pay attention to, like, the stereotypes about, like, you know, overseas guys coming over, you'd think that he'd be a good shooter. I don't know where Shaq is pulling this from. It's totally, totally baseless. Like, it doesn't even make any sense as far as just not paying attention. Who knows, man? Shaq gets paid to go up there and be Shaq, so I guess he's doing his job.
Yeah, all I ask is, like, the talking heads of the NBA, just watch, like, 2 NBA games a week. That's it. Just watch 2. Like, and not the ones that you have to watch for your TV tapings. Watch 2 other NBA games a week. Like, that's it. That's all I ask. Because, like, anybody with just the rudimentary knowledge of the NBA would know that Joe Ingles is one of the best 3-point shooters we have in this league. Like, to suggest that he's a non-3-point shooter is one of the more ridiculous things I've ever heard on NBA on TNT. Like, and I've heard some ridiculous things on that show. But yeah, some of that 3-point stuff's gonna normalize. Let's talk about how they've defended James Harden, because that's really been a major storyline going into the playoffs. So we know where the genesis of this came from, right? Like, this came from the Bucks doing this earlier in the year to Harden, where they would defend Harden from behind with Eric Bledsoe and force him right and funnel him to their big men, which at the time was Brook Lopez, and Brook Lopez would meet him square up at the rim, and it would force Harden to shoot floaters, and Harden's not as efficient on floaters as he is on any other shot in the NBA, even though he's gotten better at that. That's still something that other teams would take. So that's essentially the strategy in a nutshell. The Jazz took it to, like, a totally different, like, they're basically giving him a wide open pathway to the rim. Like, they're essentially saying, go ahead, this right side of the floor is yours. You can take a full head of steam down to the rim, find as many shooters as you want. Like, that's the other thing. The Jazz aren't even closing out on Houston's corner 3-point shooters well. Like, the Rockets have feasted on corner 3-pointers. Like, PJ Tucker is getting open corner 3-pointer after open corner 3-pointer in this series. And Harden, and that's a large part of that is because Harden's getting a full head of steam to the rim, going to the right side of the floor and finding these open shooters. And, like, I just don't think the Jazz have the personnel to do this. I just don't. Like, the Bucks are an extremely athletic team. And not to suggest that Rudy Gobert or Donovan Mitchell or any of those guys are unathletic. Like, they just, it's just a different level of athlete that you're dealing with when you're talking about Eric Bledsoe and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, Giannis is athletic enough to help on those Harden drives and come back over to those shooters. Like, and Eric Bledsoe is athletic enough to give Harden a runway without giving him an entire runway. Like, he's not going to give him a wide open rim. Like, I'm sorry, Ricky Rubio is an awesome defender. He can't do what Eric Bledsoe can do. He just can't. And I love Ricky Rubio. He's one of my favorite defenders in the league. He's an awesome, awesome perimeter defender. He's just not Eric Bledsoe. He's just not. He's not the same level of athlete he is. And I understand what Quinn Snyder is trying to do here. I just don't think they have the personnel to do it right.
Yeah, I think that's correct. They don't have the same personnel. I have mixed feelings on this, though, because I think that this is a total failure and has completely been a bad choice for them so far. I also think it might not matter. Like, if they played them straight up, I don't know if this would be going much better, right? Like, you'd think it would be going better. Well, there's not really much worse it could go, but I don't think they win the games in either way, honestly.
What is straight up?
Not hanging out behind James Harden, defending corner shooters.
Does that include a hard trap or a double team, or is it just straight up one-on-one, we're going to switch everything? Is that what you're saying? Like,
the switching is probably, I don't know, try switching, see if that works. Not this incredible shade. I mean, that's really what we're talking about, right? Is that,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Instead of trying to do, like, you know, icing or trapping or something, they're just playing this, like, they're shading him all the way back to his left, to, like, honestly behind him. And yeah. Then on top of that, they're also, that's letting, like, shooters get open. Now, I think that leaving Houston's shooters open is weirdly not the worst plan in the world.
They're not the best shooters.
Yeah, and they go cold sometimes, right? Like, if you find a situation where Houston's other shooters, other than James Harden, are going cold, then you can kind of ignore them, and then you can collapse your defense, and you can keep them from the rim, and then you have a good chance against them. But that's, to some degree, admitting that you don't actually control what's going to happen, because you just have to hope that they get cold. But so far, it's been one of the better ways to beat them. So, I don't know. I don't know that the Jazz really have an option that's going to work against the Rockets, honestly. So this has been a horrible failure, but I don't know that anything's not going to be a horrible failure. So, I mean, I guess be creative with it.
And the other thing is, like, Harden's getting lobs, too. Like, they haven't shut off the lob passes. Like, and part of it is because you kind of have to help out with Harden at the rim. And that leaves, Rudy Gobert has to leave Clint Capella open for these dunks. And that just, like, if you're leaving shooters open on top of lob passes, like, you're just cratering yourself as a defense. And this is the second best defense in the NBA. Like, the fact that Harden's doing carving up this defense is just insane. Like, it's you would think someone like Quinn Snyder would come up with a better game plan than this. And I actually don't think the premise of this theory, like, of this game plan is all that, you know, is all that bad. Like, I understand the idea of shading Harden right and funneling him. Like, I get that. And try to take away the step back three. I get it. But at some point, like, you got to scrap it, right? Like, once you realize, okay, this isn't working out for us. Like, even Ricky Rubio, like, he told us in the press conference room, like, yeah, like, we're not 100% bought in. Well, hold on there. That's a big red flag. If your players aren't 100% bought in on the strategy, at some point, you just got to go back to what you were doing all season.
Yeah, and sort of continuing to try it with it not working is not a good look. That's a big problem. Is if they really doubled down on it, maybe something interesting could happen. And maybe they feel like they're in a situation where they just have to do that, right? Like, my read on the situation is that it feels like the Jazz decided that any type of a non-gimmick defense is just not going to work, and they have to go for incredibly high variance. They have to shoot for the moon because they decided they already screwed if they just play the Rockets as they've played them previously. Which is amazing, honestly, if that's the case, because this is an incredible defense, and for them to decide the best chance they have is to kind of shoot themselves in the foot, that speaks quite a bit about Houston and James Harden in particular. So I don't know what we're going to see tomorrow in Game 3. I think there's a very good chance, like I'll put it at least even money, that they're going to not only stick to this weird defense they've been doing, but double down on it. I think they either totally drop it or they double down on it.
I suspect they drop it because I just think Harden has so many counters for what they like. By the way, did you at all think that we get to a place like after the James Harden trade, like at the time of the James Harden trade, did you ever think that we get to a point where you'd see guys just giving him an open lane, like just a wide open lane, and try these gimmicky defenses against him to try and just try to do something, to slow him down?
He's the greatest offensive genius we've seen in like decades. This guy is incredible. He's going to kill you no matter what you do, and the only question is like, can you beat them before he beats you? If they do go ahead and move away from this gimmick defense completely, that is wild to me, because essentially that is bringing the series back to zero to say, okay, we're gonna not have any of our adjustments. I guess we're gonna go back to go to standard defense, and then you're gonna go back to playing your standard game, I guess. And that's crazy. You have to assume that if both teams come into this like playing the normal game as though they didn't play the first two games, which those two games have such a weird defensive situation that I feel like any adjustments anybody made are moot. Then how can you? It's hard to expect the Jazz to go ahead and win that if they both just come into it playing straight up. So. The Rockets have a real opportunity to go into Game 3, and they can end this. And I would not be surprised at all to see them do that, because this is a weird situation for a series. The Jazz feel desperate to me, and they better be. They have to get this win.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get back to Houston really quick, because we've talked enough about the Jazz. I think they're going to play better at home. Like I think in front of that home crowd with the altitude, I think they're going to play better.
It'll for sure be the toughest game for Houston yet.
Yeah, and they're fighting for their playoff lives. Everybody knows that if you go down 3, you're not winning the series. That's never happened in NBA history. So this is essentially Utah's Game 7, right? So I think this is going to be a hell of a Game 3. I think it's going to be much closer. At the same time, I've done a pretty terrible job predicting this series. every step of the way. Game 1, I thought it was going to be a 5-point game. Game 2, I thought it was going to be like a 6 or 7-point game. Like, every time I try to predict this series, it goes the other way. Like they've been, particularly defensively, Houston's defense just looks so sharp right now. And we were talking about this before we got into the playoffs. Like, how much of Houston's defense do you buy? And I was having I was a minor skeptic, man. Like, I was having a hard time computing their defensive rebounding, how poorly they were as a defensive rebounding team compared to how well they were defending. And I just thought it was a lot of noise, and I wasn't sure how much I should believe, like, because they essentially changed their entire defensive philosophy from we're gonna play like a normal defense, we're gonna defensive rebound, we're gonna switch everything, to we're not gonna switch as much, we're not gonna defensive rebound as much, instead of getting defensive rebounds, we're gonna get a ton of deflections, and we're gonna be a much more fast court team, we're going to get a lot more transition buckets. And I was like, I'm not sure if that's going into the playoffs, if that's the wisest move. I'm not sure how many deflections you'll get in the playoffs, because teams tend to isolate more and there's less side-to-side ball movement. But here we are, first round, and the Rockets are killing them in transition. They're getting a ton of deflections. Chris Paul looks as good as he's ever looked defensively. Like, I made the case earlier in the year that I think Chris Paul should be second team all defense, like, even with all the games missed. I thought, like, the biggest turnaround for Houston defensively was when he got healthy. Like, when he got healthy, Houston's defense went from 25th to 18th. Like, that was the jump they made in the span of when he got healthy. Post All-Star break. Now, you could say other guys got healthy too. Like, Clint Capella obviously got healthy. Austin Rivers got healthy. A bunch of guys got healthy. But at the same time, like, I think the biggest difference for Houston's defense, like, Chris Paul, man. Chris Paul has been everywhere in this series defensively. He's just been a pest. Like, offensively, he's still working out some kinks. He's not been as efficient as you'd like if you're Houston. But Houston hasn't needed much from him offensively, because they've just torched this defense without him. Now, there is a real question as to whether or not that's sustainable going into a Warriors series next round. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I agree, I guess. So what's impressive is that raising your defensive rating the farther the season gets harder and harder because the future sample size gets smaller in comparison to the past sample size. So the fact that they're able to raise that much at all is incredible. Look at this. It took them having the number two defense since the All-Star break to raise it up to what it ended up at, like 15, 16, something like that?
Yeah, they were 18th.
Okay, yeah. So they had to be the second best defense for like a couple of months to raise it up to still below the halfway mark. So that's fantastic. Their defense as it stands today is really impressive. Like you said, they're getting their deflections. They're running out on fast breaks, which just craters the other team's defense also, which is incredible.
They're scoring 16 points per game on transition. Like that's insane. That's like pretty much. Do you remember that Josh Smith, Corey Brewer Rockets team? Where they were like one of the fastest teams in the NBA, and they got like a crap load of deflections because Brewer was always constantly gambling in the passing lanes leaking out and getting like a bunch of fast break opportunities. Like that's what this team reminds me of in terms of how they play defense. Like they don't play defense like a normal team. Like they completely abandoned switching everything. They still switch a lot, but they play much more conventional in that way, and at the same time, they don't defensive rebound. It's a very unique hodgepodge of strategies that they've managed to cluster here to be this good defensively.
Yeah, and so far they're not getting their asses kicked on the rebounding game, which is pretty impressive given the size that Utah has. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So being able to tread water rebounding wise makes their defense that much more viable, which is a huge deal. Like I said, I don't know how it's going to go going forward. The Jazz do have a shakier offense than a lot of teams. Their corner and overall three-point shooting is kind of suspect. So the Rockets have some like holes that they can rely upon in Utah's offense that they might not have against other teams going forward. But so far, they've made it. They look great against the Jazz, who are a very good team, who are like the advanced metrics darlings of the NBA.
No, yeah, like I 100% believe that the Jazz are one of the five best teams in the NBA. They just got a crappy first round draw. Like with the amount of things that had to go wrong, and we always talk about this in the press room. Like I feel so bad for this Jazz team. Like the amount of things that had to go wrong. You had four fourth quarter deficits of 10 points or more that flipped the other way in the last quarter. Like all that stuff happened in the span of two nights, and all you need is for one of those games to not happen that way. That's just like they could not have had a crappier draw. Like this is a second round possibly conference finals team in any normal NBA year. The fact that they've ended up on this side of the bracket is just a fluke of happenstance. Like this was not supposed to happen. And I feel really bad for the Jazz because they're a much better team than not only what their standing suggests, like what they were last year. They're much better than where they were last year. And if you if you just look at them getting eliminated in the first round, you wouldn't think that, but it's true. It's 100% true.
I mean, playoffs all have matchups in context. So, I mean, it seems like this is a good time to bring it up is that these Rockets look incredible. They look like they've really put it together and figured out and done what they said they were going to do earlier in the year, which is that they care about being the best team they can be in April and May. So this is not fair for anyone to draw the Rockets in the first round. Like the Rockets should be playing like an eighth seed tier team, honestly. They're not.
They should be playing the Clippers or the Spurs, right?
Yeah, they're not a 53-win team. The Rockets are clearly not a 53-win team at this point. The advent of Daniel House has been just... It's hard to state how important that's been for them to have this guy that they can actually rely upon. Like we wondered all year who's going to be their replacement for Trevor Ariza, and it turns out it's Daniel House.
Yeah, Daniel House, not afraid of the playoffs, not afraid of the big bright lights. That guy has been doing everything he's been doing in the regular season. Like he's been pump faking, he's been driving, he's been shooting shots he should not be taking, which is part of the appeal of House. He just has a high degree of confidence to him, and that confidence isn't just on the basketball court. Off the court, that guy is a confident fella. That guy really believes he made the right decision in gambling on himself and not taking the offer that Houston presented to him. You're right. He's been a stellar pickup for Houston. And I got to be honest, like, both of these coaches kind of threw a curveball at me in terms of what I was expecting for them in this first round series. Like, I did not, first of all, let's start with the Jazz. I did not expect the Jazz to go ahead and start Favors. Like, I just thought, like, they're going to start Jay Crowder. Like, there's no way they're going to start a traditional big lineup against the Rockets. And they did. They started a traditional big lineup against the Rockets, and I actually liked that look because I think it gives them the best chance to win, because I think Houston's biggest weakness is defensive rebounding, and the best way to attack them is to offensive rebound. So I like the big lineup, but it hasn't worked out for the Jazz, obviously. And in terms of Houston, man, I did not see Gerald Green and Kenneth Faried getting minutes over Iman Shumpert and Nene. Like, I thought for sure Iman Shumpert would play over Gerald Green, and it wouldn't even be much of a question. Same thing with Nene over Kenneth Faried. That was just the way it was looking towards the end of the season. But Mike D'Antoni threw a big curveball at us, and we're left to look at a rotation of Chris Paul, James Harden, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, Gerald Green, Daniel House, and Kenneth Faried. Like, that, and Austin Rivers, obviously. Like, I thought the bottom half of this rotation would be totally different, and it's because D'Antoni just wants that lob threat on the floor at all times. Like, he wants Kenneth Faried to be on the floor as well as Clint Capella. He wants someone there to be an outlet for James Harden's lobs, and he wants the maximum amount of shooting on the floor as possible. And when Iman Shumpert's been a break in case of emergency wing. Like, if it gets really dicey for Houston defensively, that's when Iman Shumpert plays. I didn't expect that. I thought he would be a mainstay in the rotation. Has that at all surprised you? Like, I remember we got this question before the playoffs actually started. Like, who plays, Gerald Green or Iman? We both said Iman, and this kind of threw me off like crazy.
Yeah, I suspected that it would be him for his defense, and then they pull Gerald out in case of need of offense. But yeah, it turns out that they're happy to let Gerald go out there. And honestly, it hasn't been a problem yet. We'll see if that keeps up, but Gerald Green has been really good with that bench unit for just providing, well, it's pretty cliche to say it, but he provides energy and shooting out there, and he gets that bench unit going together with typically Chris Paul. So it's been a good look. Faried has been able to really like run the court as well, and that's I think in a lot of ways that matter to D'Antoni. Faried is closer to Capella than Nene is. Because even though Faried defensively is quite a bit to be desired, he's a lob threat, like you said, and he runs the court in a way that Capella has been doing to some degree of less notice than it should have. Capella is running down the court constantly. He is a lot faster than he's been before, and more importantly, he's a lot more willing to be the first guy down the court. So both those guys provide that in a way which I think has been really difficult for the Jazz to deal with.
Yeah, like again, I just thought D'Antoni's going to go with the defensive guys. And Nene and Shumpert are much better defenders than Gerald Green and Kenneth Faried. But so far, he hasn't needed that level of defense against this Jazz team. And I guess the idea here is we're going to go offense, 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 like, until a team forces us to go defense. And to be honest, they're playing great defense. It's not like they're sacrificing much in the way of defense. Like, they're absolutely killing the Jazz, as we said multiple times throughout this podcast. Like, they have the third best defense in the playoffs. Only the Celtics and the Bucks have been better than them. And offensively, they have the second best best offense in the NBA. Like, they're beating the Jazz by 26.5 points per 100 possessions. That's ridiculous, man. Like, that's just ludicrous. Like, only the Bucks have a higher point differential, who are playing a Pistons team that shouldn't even be in the playoffs without Blake Griffin. Like the Rockets have been just so good, just so good. I'm buying as much stock as I can in this team. I'm back in on buying the stock. Like, I'm in, because the way they've defended is just like they're communicating on a level that I didn't see them doing going into the playoffs. And the defensive rebounding, as you mentioned, has not been a problem. It has not been a problem. And you would think, if there was a team that would give Houston problems, it would be this Utah Jazz team, because on the boards they have guys who can give Houston trouble, and so far it hasn't. So far they've been carrying their own weight on the boards, and they've just dominated this series.
It's weird because there's actually, it feels like we're waiting to have any real criticism so far, right? They've done everything that that they could have possibly done to convince us that they're legit. They're dominating this five seed and incredibly good. The Jazz are a very good team, as we said earlier.
Forrest, didn't you pick the Rockets to win in seven games? Like, wasn't that your pick?
That was my safety pick because I was like, I don't know which Rockets we're gonna get. But
I picked six I games. Like we both had a high degree of respect for this Jazz team.
I feel like we know which team we're getting now, though. That's the big thing. What they needed to answer was, which Rockets team is gonna show up in the playoffs? And so far, it is the best possible Rockets team. So I want to wait until like this series is more over than this, but. So they're on track to give us a whole lot to talk about between series, assuming they go ahead and close this one out.
Right. Like, I agree. Like, we need to see more fleshed out, right? Like, because, again, the series isn't over. They haven't played on the road yet. And until they close it out, it's really hard to say concretely that they are legitimately the best team in the playoffs because they played like the best team in the playoffs. It's pretty hard to concretely say that until they finish off this Jazz team. But everything we've seen so far has been encouraging. And I want to ask you a question. So this has been talked about a lot, like, and frankly, it's been kind of pounded into the ground a little bit this past week. Like, do you think playing the Warriors in round two is better than playing the Warriors in the conference finals? I think I even asked you this on the last podcast, but things are different. We've seen this Rockets team play dominant basketball and restful basketball. Like, Harden and Chris Paul aren't even breaking much sweat here. Like, they're playing, like, Harden's playing 33 minutes a game here. Chris Paul is playing like 31, 32. So they're getting decent rest here in this series. So with all that in mind, with everything you've seen, do you think that the Rockets have actually put themselves in a position to go into a Warrior series fresher and better than they were last year?
They've got a better shot now than they, like, assuming that both of those teams go ahead and win their series, they've got a better shot now than if they play them in the conference finals. As I said, the math has always been, what are the chances that the Warriors lose elsewhere, right? If you know that you're 100% going to have to play the Warriors, then you do want to get them earlier than later if you're the Rockets. So it's probably, especially because this Jet, if they can go out and get another win, if they win tomorrow and this is a 3-0 series, they have a really good shot at, like, A, it's over at that point. Like, no one's ever come back from 3-0, and I doubt anyone ever will. So if you can go ahead and put the clamps on them and get that 3-0 lead, then you can kind of stop stressing out about this series and start to prepare a little bit for going forward.
And our guy, Kelly Eco, can stop sweating out about playing another Game 6 in Utah. Like, he doesn't want to go back there at all. He does not want to go back there at all.
Apparently not. So... If they can, I mean, in that case, also get a really good chance of winning in four games, go ahead and getting a sweep. These games have been pretty far apart as well, so the players are getting more rest. If they go ahead and win this series quickly, they're not going to be in a better situation to deal with the Warriors because they're going to be at basically max health and max rest. Like, knock on wood, God forbid something happens over the next couple of games. So it's this right now. I don't think you could have predicted that this would be what happened.
No.
But
most
this
didn't.
Currently is, seems quite good.
Right. I mean, most people thought this would be a 6 or 7 game series, including us. This has gone as good as you'd want if you're a Rockets fan. Let's talk about DeMarcus Cousins a little bit, because I talked about this on this last Periscope that we did before the game, and I kind of posed this question to Ali Khan, and I'm not sure what you think about this. Like, does DeMarcus Cousins and the timing of his quad injury, which really sucks for DeMarcus, by the way. Guy was just getting healthy from his Achilles, started to look pretty decent for the Warriors, and this quad injury happens to him going into free agency. That sucks. I really feel bad for him. Do you think this quad injury for DeMarcus makes much of a difference in a Houston Rockets series, and does this hurt or help the Warriors get to where they want to be in a Rockets series?
I actually think this helps the Warriors a little bit in that I don't think that Cousins was going to be a useful player for them against Houston and against other teams too. I think they honestly look a little better without him. And maybe that's not like a nice thing to say about DeMarcus Cousins, but he's not the same player he used to be. And also he is really just like, He's like a scoop of ice cream on a scoop of ice cream. It's not really necessary, and he's not always going to be a good fit. So I think that making
you're
them
saying
play...
I can't have two scoops of ice cream now.
Okay, look, it's a bit of a torture metaphor, but you know, I'm saying that you're putting sprinkles on your sprinkle. That's icing on your icing. How's that sound? So
I like icing, man. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
he doesn't, I think, raise their ceiling particularly, or rather, I guess he doesn't raise their average. He might raise their ceiling, but I don't think he raises their average. I think the more they play like the Warriors they were a few years ago, aka the Warriors before Kevin Durant came by, the more likely they are to have an easier time. So I think it might help them slightly, and I definitely don't think it really hurts them at all.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, I do think the Warriors are better without DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, even their numbers bear out that they're better without DeMarcus Cousins. Their core five is Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, right? Like, and Klay Thompson. Like, that's their five. Like, their core five is still intact. Like, DeMarcus, sure, him not being on the floor takes away a tool in a possible Rockets series. And he did play well against the Rockets in that last game. I'm not sure if I totally buy that he would have been that good in a seven-game series. Like, I just, again, he's just coming off the Achilles. I don't think he can defend in space against the Rockets. And I think the Rockets would have put him in the torture chamber. I think Steve Kerr would have benched him by game three. I really do think that he was a non-factor in a Rocket series, if not a detriment to the Warriors. Now I feel like it's a little bit more of an even playing field in that the Warriors don't have to worry about DeMarcus Cousins but potentially being a black hole for their defense. I think Kevon Looney is actually much better against the Rockets than any other big man, any other big man that the Warriors could throw out there. So I think Kevon Looney and Draymond Green are really the centers that really matter for the Warriors. In a possible Rocket series, I don't think any other big man really matters. I agree. I think this is going to make little to no difference in a series. If anything, this will probably make the Warriors a little bit better.
Yep. I'm interested to see how that goes. This Warriors team is giving us a lot to think about so far.
Yeah,
so.
I don't want to completely write off this Utah Jazz team, by the way. Like, I know we're talking through them, kind of like we're talking about the next series for Houston, but like, it just looks really dark. And maybe we'll be back here in 4 days, and the Jazz will make this thing a series. But I think at this point in the series, we can safely say that Houston has a significant leg up and is a strong favorite to come out of this, and I feel bad that the Jazz had to endure this. Jazz fans had a lot to endure towards the end of the season. They started the season really poorly, much like the Rockets, and they ended it really strong. Had a nice closing schedule for them, and they drew Houston in the first round. That just sucks.
Yeah, the series is not over, but
it's over.
It's close to being over. Yeah. Like I said, if the Rockets win Game 3, it's definitely over. Even if the Rockets lose Game 3 and they win Game 4, it's still pretty damn close to over. So it's hard not to look past the Jazz a little bit. I think it's worth still paying attention to this series until it is well and truly over. But, yeah, you're right. It sucks for them. They deserve better than this. They are better than a fifth seed, honestly. And the Rockets are better than a fourth seed. So this is not a lineup. This is not a matchup you should be seeing in round one. This is a matchup you should be seeing in round two or three.
Yeah, overall, I would say this series has definitely changed the way I thought about the Rockets. I definitely respect them a lot more. Like, they've gained a high degree of respect for me the way they've taken care of business in these first two games. So it's definitely an important thing that we had to see these first two games. It's definitely not nothing that the Rockets start the series like this. We've taken a lot of data out of this, and a lot of things that the Rockets have proved us to be wrong about. And that's great if you're a Rockets fan. So subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter at SolMonaleeNBA. Follow Forrest at Twitter at DoNots. How do you spell that, Forrest?
It's DUNOTS.
And give us a 5-star rating on iTunes because it helps you find the show. And yeah, guys, great. We'll be right back.
Get really into your favorite shows and movies all in one place with Flex, a 4K streaming box you get free with Xfinity Internet. And get Peacock Premium at no additional cost. Learn more at Xfinity.com/Flex. Restrictions apply. Requires postpaid Xfinity Internet excluding Internet Essentials. One device included.